For those looking for a liberatory martial arts learning approach and curriculum, we've created Liberation Martial Arts. It doesn't just teach you martial arts, it's also an approach to learning movement skills. The whole point of our program is to remove the need for a coach, to liberate you from the need of top-down instruction and toxic gyms. If you have a coach and also have a gym, then you can apply our learning approach to improve your progress. Or maybe you also need a supplemental martial arts community as a counter to the commercial gym you go to. You can actually apply our learning approach to learn anything, and our practitioners are. They're applying it to all sorts of things, whether physical, mental, or even personal. It's just a radically different approach to everything. Sign up for Liberation Martial Arts at the Southpaw Pod Patreon, or support us by signing up for one of the other tiers, and help us support this project while also getting access to bonus content, like early releases of SDS9 with transcripts. SDS9 Season 3 was recorded from the beginning of 2023 to early 2024 and was first published on Patreon. Now that we're done with the season, the entire season is being released all at once on the Southpaw public feed. Find Season 4 on the Southpaw Pod Patreon. This is Southpaw Deep Space Nine Season 3, where we analyze Deep Space Nine and Star Trek from a political and historical lens episode by episode. I'm watching DS9 with fresh eyes, and Scott is our veteran Trek fan. We are discussing Season 3 of DS9, Episode 9, Defiant. Scott, can you tell us about this episode?
On the deck, Kira is getting overwhelmed. Starfleet HD, some homework. It needs to be done. Miles and Dax and Bashir are overwhelming Kira with all that they need. She is beyond agitated with work. She hasn't had a day off in ages. Bashir uses his medical skills and credentials to make sure that she gets a break. Bashir and Kira have a spa day set up at Quark's so Kira can just chill out. William Riker, what? William Riker? Jonathan Frakes, William Riker, commander of the USS Enterprise, Picard's number one from the Next Generation, shows up out of nowhere to sit at the bar. He is welcomed on and has built up leave and wants to be on his bachelor grizzly. He is charming everybody. The Hollow Suite is intimated to, again, this is another episode where the Hollow Suite sort of intimates some sex work opportunities or something of that nature. The ladies of Deep Space Nine, they like Riker. I mean, this is Beard Riker. This is essential, you know, zaddy Riker that people love. Kira says that she's involved with someone though, and we, you know, Vedic Boral, but that won't have anything to do with anything later. They run to each other later again, and Kira recommends a tour of the station. And Riker's like, tell me about the Defiant. On the Defiant, Riker sees Miles, who worked for years on the Enterprise, but he's kind of miffed. And Kira lowers the security options so Riker can use the ship. And that's when he phase stuns Kira and has these cats, Tamala and Kalita, beam on board. They look like they may be Maquis, which is, you know, that group that we met a few episodes, a little while ago. Alarms sound, and the Defiant is having a moment. There is a floor breach. People are showing up. Riker says that there are issues and asks to be released from the dock. The Defiant beams away. The Defiant are going to the Badlands. a region of space with tough terrain on the border of the Federation and Cardassian space, where the Maquis and the Cardassians are having beef. Riker takes off his beard, showing a goatee, which, as we know, is an evil Trek trope, but it also reveals that he is Thomas Riker, who is a transporter duplicate of the Will Riker we know, and we last saw him in the Next Generation episode, Second Chances. Miles explains the situation that there are two Rikers that are pretty much identical for every way that they can, except for where the change happened. They also believe that T-Rex here, Riker, is Maquis, and warn Gul Dukat that the Defiant is with the Maquis, and as we know, the Defiant is a warship. This is not good. So Federation wants to make a team up with Central Command. Dukat believes that Cardassia will assume this as an act of Federation supporting a regime change, which will allow Central Command to invade the Maquis and the Federation colonies and the DMZ. And Sisko offers to go with Dukat to show good faith and find the Defiant before things get really action-packed, hoping to disable the ship and prevent the war. And so Ben is going to go to Cardassia with Dukat. For the rest of this episode, I'm going to refer to Thomas Riker as T. Riker. T. Riker apologizes for his duplicity when Kira wakes up. He says she should understand, as she is a freedom fighter too, and the Maquis are freedom fighters, and they load the Defiant and are going to head to the border. On Cardassia, Ben brings up that he is helping an enemy to find a friendly ship. This is some new Trek ground. And the Obsidian Order, which is sort of the secret operation operative part of the Cardassian vibe, is there. We have been led to believe that Garak has had something to do with them at some point, but of course he is just a tailor. And they are doing the Mistrust Macarena. Sisko reveals that there is a cloak device on the Defiant, which creates discomfort, even though the Obsidian Order reveals that they knew that already, that the Romulans have given cloaking device to the Defiant, and there is this sort of discomfort with the Obsidian Order and Central Command and who controls what on Cardassia, and they believe that they can make an anti-cloaking photon beam. So back on the Defiant, they are in the space, both sides are getting ready. Sisko notices that the Defiant isn't cloaking, and then they realize it's not the Defiant. It's pretending to be something else. There's these maneuvers that are just doing maneuvering things. And the cloaked Defiant attacks some DMZ outputs and is heading to Cardassian territory. Dukat is getting dissed by the Obsidian Order. They are showing him a lot of disrespect. The Defiant cloak stops working because it turns out that Kira is sabotaging from the inside. And T-Riker is perplexed. He doesn't understand why Kira isn't sympathetic to messing up Cardassians. He believes that she should hate Cardassians. And Kira points out that the defiance that they are doing is different than what she is doing. And yeah, there's a different defiance. And yes, the pun is intended. Sisko and Dukat are strategizing. Dukat is also distracted because he was supposed to be spending time with his son. They were supposed to go to an amusement park today. And you'd think that this would open up a way for a connection between Ben and Dukat, because as leaders, they sometimes fail their children. But Dukat says, this is just going to make my son hate you guys, because he's going to remember that the day he was supposed to go to amusement park with his dad is the day that a Federation ship attacked his people. The Defiant is not working right. T. Riker is going for an attack in a less optimal spot, but he thinks that there's actually a secret fleet in the Araya sector. Kira says T. Riker is acting more like a hero than a terrorist, says terrorists don't get to be heroes. The T word is thrown out in an interesting way. Sisko shows that the behavior of the Maquis attacks are to draw out Cardassians, and now we'll go to the sector that supposedly has nothing of interest, because Arrius is supposedly uninhabited. So Dukat will send a ship to Arrius, but the Obsidian Order says no, that any warship that goes to Arrius will get blasted. The Obsidian Order and the Central Command are at odds. As the Defiant goes to Arrius, it warps, but the Central Command ships can't get there in time. But as we may have thought, the Obsidian Order, apparently against the rules of what they're supposed to do, have had ships in the Arrius sector. The Obsidian Order are not supposed to do that. They are arming themselves. Uh-oh. Kira points to T. Riker that to go to Arrius is a death sentence. Sisko tells Dukat that if they accept the Defiant in phase and defeat, and the Maquis will go to the Federation to be charged under the Federation, and they just want to get the Defiant. Dukat agrees to this so he can have the Obsidian Order intel scanned by the Defiant, because the Defiant has scanned what's going on. But Dukat says, just give me T. Riker. And Sisko accepts as long as the death penalty is off the table. Sisko appears to the Defiant asking for the files and T. Riker. T. Riker accepts. He goes to kiss Kira and he beams out.
A note to our listeners. If you love the Southpaw Project, please support us and help us get paid for our labor by financially supporting us on Patreon. This will give you access to exclusive bonus content, like early releases of Southpaw Deep Space Nine, our fictional narrative podcast, Fighter's Brew, break-free versions of our shows without interruptions like you're hearing now, bonus articles, Fighter's Brew transcripts with extra content, Liberation Martial Arts Online, as well as our private chat group on Discord. You can also make one-time donations at Ko-Fi, or show your solidarity by wearing our swag. You can find all pertinent links at southpawpod.com. So, meeting Thomas Riker is an example of the transporter problem I mentioned before.
I was so excited watching this episode. I was like, Sam is going to bring back the transporter thing we spoke about that gave me panic attacks a couple episodes ago.
Yeah. So, we talked about this. The transporter isn't actually transporting you, but disintegrating you here and making a copy of you somewhere else. Thomas Riker is what happens when you end up making two copies, not one. So though he's taken the identity of a copy of William Riker, they're both just copies, and really either could have claimed to be the real Riker, or Riker could exist as a dual entity. Even Memory Alpha recognizes this. Here's their entry on Thomas Riker. Quote, William Thomas Tom Riker was a result of a transporter accident in 2361 that created two William Thomas Rikers, genetically indistinguishable from each other, with personality and memories identical to the point of the duplication. One of the duplicates continued to be known as William Riker. The other chose to use his middle name and be known as Thomas Riker, end quote. So they're both duplicates, and that's how the transporter works, and that is consistent with Memory Alpha.
Yeah, so yeah, he's a transporter copy. He's a carbon copy and is the same person. And they decide that this version of a clone, well, it's not really a clone, is it? Is able to live. And he goes on doing Riker shit because Rikers are adventurous. Rikers have a sense of justice. He's just different. He went a different path. And his path is rocking a goatee and working with the Maquis. And, you know, the Maquis have some points, you know?
Now, the womanizing of the Rikers and their interests in Dabo girls and holosuites really not aging well. but I'm sure in the 90s, this was considered charming. But when they talked about Kira already having her heart set on someone else, I thought it was going to turn out to be Odo, but it was Vedic Borel. And I wonder if that was intentional to make us think that, because the way it was introduced, they didn't say, oh, your significant other is Vedic Borel. It was more like, oh, there's somebody else. And so for a second, we're like, who? And then you're like, oh. Now, I was sort of surprised, but not surprised to see Kira was still with Vedic Borel after finding out he was part of a cover-up that killed a bunch of Bajorans, including children. But they forgive a lot in 90s television. Interestingly, Tom Riker became a member of the Maquis while serving on the USS Gandhi. Seems to be a deliberate liberal allusion being made here. But what I don't like is how Sisko narcs on the Maquis and Thomas Riker to the Cardassians, or how they all paint the Maquis as terrorists. And I know you had a problem with that as well. And even Kira saying she was a former terrorist instead of a freedom fighter. They're just accepting the oppressor's framing and propaganda.
Yeah, because those are words, and those words are important. And when you frame those words on people, they often don't go away. And yeah, it's using the oppressor's words to describe you. And it frustrated me. There are some things about this season which frustrate me, though I do still, again, believe as a whole, it is a good season. And I do think that it's telling that on the season where the show grows the beard, we have the character for whom growing the beard comes from, which is that when Riker grew his beard in The Next Generation, it was considered a point where the show got a lot better. And the Deep Space Nine is really coming into its own in season 3 and growing the beard. And perhaps we may see Sisko grow the beard. So as we know in TV tropes, if you've ever heard of jumping the shark, which comes from the Happy Days episode where Fonz literally jumps the shark, the antithesis of that is growing the beard. And it's what's happening here.
And I think starting from season 3, in this rewatch for you and a lot of people following along, you know how you said overall, you still think the show is good and the story is good? I think this is where we also have to differentiate liking the decisions of the crew and the characters versus the quality of the show. Because I think before with The Next Generation, and even how people watched this show previously before their political awakening, it was one and the same. You like the show because you like the characters, because you like the decisions they made. Now it might be like you can like the show without necessarily liking Starfleet or the decisions the characters make, because you don't have to see them as heroes to enjoy the show. You just have to enjoy the show and the storytelling. And whether you see them as good or bad or something in between is up to you, but they don't have to be one and the same. So I think that has to be said out loud, because I feel like some people need to be given that permission or that license to watch a show. Whereas now, like, you know, you could like a show where the characters are anti-heroes, or even you're watching a show and it's about a villain, but they make it explicit. And with this, they don't explicitly tell you these are heroes either. You're just watching these people doing their jobs and making their decisions and living their lives, and you can judge them and judge the show independently from each other.
Yeah. And but also this is just also my leftism and my activism, and the things that really push me do now form how I read, enjoy, work out, eat. It's just part of it. You know, I'm now watching Star Trek and then also being like, oh, well, this kind of relates to the pitfalls of national consciousness from The Wretched and the Earth of Franz Fanon, you know, where it's like during the struggle for liberation, the leader awakens the people and promised from a forward match, heroic and unmitigated. And I'm like, that's what I see that T. Riker is trying to do, because that's the archetype of Riker, of someone with justice. So I did get frustrated when they threw around the T word. And so it did get me going back to the Praxis. And I read a lot of Fanon, Frary, and C.L.R. James. That's like the basis of where I do a lot of my learning and meditation on the stuff. So, but like, we were also like talking about Sankara this season, you know? And so that is what this show, I'm hoping, is bringing to Deep Space Nine in a way that episode recap podcasts don't always do.
Yeah. And so sometimes, like, an episode that you watched previously can get you all riled up for the first time in a rewatch.
Yeah.
Now, this whole episode, at least to me, was basically a metaphor for quote-unquote terrorist suicide missions. Definitely felt like it had Islamophobia vibes, with Kira asserting Riker is doing this for glory or to be made a hero. These are common narratives about Islamic, quote-unquote, terrorists, radical Islam and such. And this was very much becoming a thing in the 90s in the Imperial Corps. We also find the Obsidian Order, which is Cardassia CIA, is keeping their own secrets and running a deep state within Cardassia. Though the right has appropriated the term, deep state was initially a term coined by the left to talk about the government within the government being run by the intelligence agencies. Basically, just like Cardassia, the real deep state was undermining every peace effort during the Cold War. And in this episode, we finally see how powerful the Defiant is. So, to the point that James brought up previously, how peaceful is it if you have something as powerful as the Defiant going on your peace missions? We also see Riker given to the Cardassians for a peace deal that we already know is being undermined by the Obsidian Order. The Defiant was also trapped in this predicament with no way out because DS9 narked on him. And without that, it wasn't going to be a quote-unquote suicide mission for glory. So, I didn't like many of the decisions made in this episode, nor its moral framework, but then again, I don't have to agree with Starfleet or see them as heroes either. Riker was Defiant, like the title says, and that's who I sided with for this episode. And I feel like they did him dirty at the end. So overall, I think this was a good episode. The kiss at the end by Riker felt out of place, but whatever. Maybe it's more a pattern of Kira falling for the wrong dudes when the right goo is right in front of her. I don't know. Scott, your takeaways from this episode?
I have a few takeaways. It made me want to read a little bit more into some the praxis of teleportation and how that goes into framework and body doubles in the context. But honestly, it's like sort of a mythology episode, but also is not. But I give it a solid 4 because it had me at the end of my seat. I was just like really into it. And this is an episode that I haven't watched in any of my recent rewatches because I thought of it as a throwaway episode, even though the McKee are significant in the Star Trek story, and even more so if you're watching new Trek, like the McKee's important. But I wasn't that into it the last few rewatches, but I was into it, and again, I'm like, When an episode of this has me revisiting Leon Trotsky and Franz Fanon, and it's neat. So I give this episode 4 stars of a non-mythology. The acting was great. I think having Frakes helping out in the show is, for the most part, good. You know, he directed a bunch of Star Trek movies, directed episodes of every Star Trek show, I believe, except for the original series. He gets how to direct Trek. And it was fun.
And to your point about teleportation and the problems that arise from that, I think we should also talk a little bit, or at least mention, some questions from the philosophical school of ethics. So meaning, ethics as a moral framework, as a philosophy, if we are to think about the ethics of the transporter, then what would be ethical? Is the transporter itself ethical? I think it doesn't have to be ethical or unethical. I think, though, if this existed in real life, the ethical thing to do is to be transparent. You don't just tell people, hey, you're going to be transported from here to there and just that's it. That would be unethical. I think what you would have to do is be transparent and tell them, if you do this, you will die here and then a copy of you will be sent over there. Are you okay with that? And you would have to have people sign off. But if that was true, the legality of that, it would never be legal. But if it were to be legal, then you have to let people do it with informed consent. Because them consenting to be transported is different from them consenting to be disintegrated and have a copy made of them somewhere else. So if nothing else, the bare minimum has to be transparency. Whether in a just society you even allow such a thing to exist, that's a different question. All right, Scott, can you tell us about the next episode?
Yeah, fascination. The celebration gets a little too hyped and we get to, in my opinion, one of the first meh episodes of season 3.
Until then, if you like this episode and like what we do, support us on Patreon. We also have the Liberation Martial Arts program if you want to train with us from wherever you are. It's both theory and practice and removes the need for an instructor. What you're learning is how to teach yourself. It's also an approach you can take with you from the gym into the world. Sponsors get a monthly training session with me, either in person or online. Supporting me not only helps me pay my bills, but it also helps me support my family. Find all our links, including Southpaw merch, at southpawpod.com.